All right. Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you, and please be seated. Welcome to the morning panel of the April session of the Court of Appeals. My name is Frankie Moore. I'm the presiding judge today. I am from North Platte, and I'm pleased to be joined on my right by our chief judge, Mike Pirtle from Omaha, and on my left by Judge Larry Welch of Plattsmouth. We have three cases on the call this morning. I will call your name to come forward, and then I will repeat it for purposes of the video conferencing, the live streaming this morning. And so please do remember we are being live streamed over NET. The first case this morning is Nelson Engineering versus Ingredion Incorporated. You may approach. Again, the first case is Nelson Engineering versus Ingredion Incorporated. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One will be arguing this morning.
Yep. One, we're from Austin, who's a party to this case, even mm-hmm. though it's titled Nelson versus Ingredion. Austin is a...
Right. And you are Mr. Zweig?
Zweig, yes.
Zweig, okay, thank you. Welcome to Nebraska.
Thank you very much.
And I'm David Brazy. I'm arguing on behalf of Nelson Engineering Construction.
Okay, and you may be seated.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ethan Zweig, arguing on behalf of Austin Building and Design this morning. Thank you to the court for admitting me to appear here this morning. I first wanted to start with the court's question regarding jurisdiction of this matter. This court does have jurisdiction over this matter. It is undisputed between the parties and under Nebraska law that a motion to compel, the denial of a motion to compel arbitration is a final appealable order, and that is what we have here, although not titled as so.
Well, so that's the issue, isn't it? Or at least a preliminary issue is we don't have a motion to compel arbitration that was decided here, do we?
That is correct. Austin did not file a motion to compel arbitration. Mm-hmm. It filed a motion to stay the state court action pending determination of a petition to compel arbitration in the Nebraska Federal District Court. But the order here is the functional equivalent of a denial of a motion to compel arbitration because it decides, the order decides that Austin, the subcontract arbitration clauses are not enforceable because the prime contract between Austin and the owner of the construction project controls, and therefore the dispute resolution provision in the prime contract controls over the dispute resolution provision in the subcontracts between Austin and Nelson.
Isn't one of your arguments, at least alternatively, that the district court went too far in making the determination on the arbitrability of the action because all you had filed was a motion to stay?
That is correct. I think that is outside of that. I will get to that point, but I think that is outside the jurisdictional question. Austin's position is that we did not put the merits of the arbitrate or the mm-hmm. interpretation of the contract at issue by filing the motion to stay.
And isn't that one of the things we could decide on appeal, is that the court went too far?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, if just stepping to those factors quickly.
Well, I don't want to get to that yet, sure. But as it relates to jurisdiction, if we're only looking at this as a motion to stay, doesn't Shasta-Lennon control that?
I don't think so, because the order itself is what is being appealed, not the arguments in the motion. And the order itself decided, you know, interpreted the contract on the merits. And I think if this court decides that we go back it doesn't have jurisdiction because a motion to, this was a motion to stay rather than a motion to compel arbitration. We would simply be going back to file something titled a motion to compel arbitration, and I'm not even sure, given the language in this order, we would have even a good faith basis to file that motion, given what the court ruled in this order. Say, the court has already ruled that the prime contract controls over the dispute resolution provision of the prime contract controls over the dispute resolution provisions of the subcontract. So Austin really wouldn't have, I mean, theoretically, we could go back and file something titled a motion to compel arbitration and argue the contract, you know, the court essentially misinterpreted the contract in this order. But I think the issue has already been resolved by this court. I don't think...
But you have a pending action in federal court on that issue, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. That's correct. And I think that goes to sort of the dichotomy of ruling on the merits when Austin only asked for a stay, and did the court actually consider the factors in determining whether a stay is appropriate? And I think the answer here is no. You know, even if you look at the first factors of what a trial court is supposed to consider in determining whether a stay is appropriate, one of the factors is the interest of the court. And here, Austin put this issue in front of the federal court before it put the issue in front of the state court.
What's the impact of that? What's the impact of the state court's order now as it relates to the federal court where the specific issue is in front of it?
What's the impact of the state court order with respect to the federal court action?
Yes.
Well, I can tell you that the current status of the federal court action is, and this also relates to jurisdiction. I don't mean to, this will answer your question, but it goes back to the jurisdiction too. Nelson filed a motion. The irony about this whole argument from Nelson about jurisdiction, and I understand the court's question given sort of the lack of a motion to compel. But in the federal action, these are public filings, obviously, and I think the court can take judicial notice of these public filings, is Nelson argued that this matter had already been decided, the issue about arbitrability had already been decided by the state court, and filed a motion to dismiss, arguing under Rooker-Feldman that the federal case should be dismissed because this issue had already been decided by the state court. Essentially, that the motion to compel arbitration had been decided by the state court, and the federal court should dismiss the action. And so Nelson doesn't believe that this is not that the state court order did not decide this issue. Nelson believes the state court order decided this issue and filed papers in the federal court stating as such. It's our position, though, that, again, this is on appeal. You know, it is not federal and state courts. It's not improper for parallel litigation to occur in both courts. Austin put this motion in front of the state court, in front of the federal court first. Under Nebraska law, it's policy to defer to the state court, to the first court that took jurisdiction over the issue. And the state court only took jurisdiction over this issue when Austin filed the motion to stay. Now, Nelson, in response to that motion to stay, filed a merits brief arguing that the subcontract arbitration provisions are not enforceable because the prime contract controls. And the court seized upon that and ruled on the merits rather than on the stay.
So I assume that's what you argued in federal court in response to that.
Correct. And, you know, with respect to the brief, the motion to dismiss filed by Nelson under Rooker-Feldman, it's a similar issue. There's a temporal issue under the Rooker-Feldman doctrine saying, essentially, the Rooker-Feldman is you're not supposed to appeal state court decisions to federal courts. But there's a temporal issue, there's a temporal factor related to that. If the federal court takes jurisdiction first, Rooker-Feldman doesn't apply. You can't appeal something that wasn't before the state court.
So if you're right in your argument, though, doesn't that make this order not a final order? Because it hasn't resolved the issue of arbitrability.
I disagree with that.
Why is that?
Because the order itself, I mean, I don't think we can look past the actual order itself. The order itself rules, the state court order itself rules that Nelson cannot, that Austin cannot file, enforce the arbitration provisions. Now, whether, and like I said, the parallel action is not improper between state and federal courts on this issue. And frankly, because we filed a motion to stay, you know, it wasn't expected that the merits would be ruled upon, but that's actually what the court did. So it's the functional equivalent of a motion to a denial of arbitration here. We, like I said, we would just be going back essentially to re-argue this issue in state court and get a basically the same order. I don't think if we essentially went back and said, no, you were wrong in the motion to stay order, you've interpreted the contract wrong, the state court would say, well, you're right, I was wrong. I'm changing my mind on this, and you can compel arbitration here.
Of course, your other remedy is to pursue the federal court motion to compel arbitration.
True. But like I said, you know, Nelson is still challenging jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Even after the motion dismissed, they're challenging jurisdiction in the federal court. I'm currently briefing under whether it should, under the Colorado River abstention, that the federal court should cede jurisdiction back to the state court on this issue. So Nelson essentially is coming in here arguing this court doesn't have jurisdiction, and it's arguing in the federal court that federal court doesn't have jurisdiction because the state court has already decided the issue. And I think based on that, I mean, this court, it is the functional equivalent, like I said, of a denial of a motion to compel arbitration, because we would just be going back to file something titled motion to compel arbitration to get the same order. And that's why this court has jurisdiction over the issue. I'd like to, if possible, reserve 10 seconds for rebuttal. That's okay.
Sure. Thank you, counsel.
Hey, please the court, opposing counsel. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is David Brazy. I represent the Appalachian Nelson Engineering Construction, Inc. Again, the appellant seeks the reversal of a motion to stay Nelson's lawsuit to foreclose on a construction lien on Ingredion, another party to this case, real estate. Three issues, I think, that are presented. We went through the jurisdiction, and I think that can be answered by also addressing the other two issues, the one being whether the court correctly or applied the correct law in denying the motion to stay, and then whether the district court correctly concluded that the subcontracts arbitration provisions did not apply to this dispute. And these three issues, I think, can be answered by determining whether Nelson had a claim, as that term is defined under the subcontracts, against Nelson or against Austin.
Well, would you mind, before getting to those merits, to address the jurisdiction issue of whether we have a final appealable order?
Sure, Judge. Again, it's based on, I think both parties agree that the only jurisdiction that's available here is whether there's a substantial right was affected in a special proceeding. So basically, what is the substantial right here? Well, getting to, is there a claim against Austin? And there is not a claim against Austin. We are not seeking payment of money. We are not seeking extension of a deadline. We're not seeking interpretation of the subcontract. Of the subcontracts. That's how claim is defined in the subcontracts. We are not seeking that. There is no substantial right affected because there is no right to arbitrate. Again, and then with the special proceeding, Judge Moore referenced the Shasta-Lennon case. In that case, they filed a motion to dismiss based on arbitration, and instead of a motion to compel arbitration, and the court ruled that it was not a special proceeding because it was a motion to dismiss. Well, I think the motion to stay is similar to the motion to dismiss in the Shasta case. So the argument is there's no jurisdiction based on no substantial right affected and no special proceeding.
Okay, so you don't think we have a final order? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But in federal court, you're suggesting the opposite, right? That this is a final resolution to this matter, and therefore the federal court can no longer hear it.
Well, federal court, we're asking for a stay of that, not that there's no jurisdiction in federal court.
Wasn't there a motion to dismiss?
There was, that was denied. And then opposing counsel failed to mention is that the federal district court judge required us to brief the Colorado River Extension Doctrine. It wasn't brought by Nelson. So again, I believe that that it's not a final appealable order. And I think I want to go back to, this really wasn't addressed much, but back to whether the factors for considering a motion to stay were required to be considered by the district court. Well, the Kelly v. Benchmark case that cited numerous times in appellant's brief, the Nebraska Supreme Court states that when a court is considering whether to stay litigation in favor of arbitration, that they first have to determine if there's an agreement to arbitrate, and second, they need to determine if the dispute before it, if that agreement to arbitrate applies to that dispute. And that's basically what the district court did here. First found that there's subcontracts that, yes, between Nelson and Austin, yes, if there's a claim, then yes, there is an agreement to arbitrate. The district court then found that those were not applicable, though, based on the prime contract, so that they did not apply. So the district court did follow the correct analysis, first determining that the dispute before it did not have to consider the arbitration provisions and the subcontracts. And so those balancing factors that are in Kelly and some of those other cases cited, the district court didn't need to consider those because, again, the arbitration provisions did not apply. Although we agree with the district court on its determination that the subcontract provisions don't apply, again, and that was based on the prime contract and the ambiguity with the prime contract and the subcontracts, but Nelson believes that the district court didn't need to go that far, just needed to look at the subcontract arbitration provisions themselves in the plain terms. Again, those provisions state that if there's a claim, if Austin or Nelson have a claim against one another, those claims need to be arbitrated. And again, the claim is, are we asking for money? Are we asking for an extension of a deadline? Are we asking for any sort of relief from them? And that's the definition of the claim. Well, we're not asking anything from Ingredient or from Austin here. We're asking it from Ingredient. This is a foreclosure on a construction lien on Ingredient's property and Quantum Merowith claim. And we're only naming Austin because, or Austin and Sioux City Foundry Company, because they filed construction liens after us. And under Nebraska case law, they're necessary parties. So, and then, Austin makes an argument in their reply brief, I believe, about how we have to somehow prove the contract or that we substantially performed the contract with them to be able to foreclose on the construction lien. And that's not the case. A subcontractor may foreclose on a construction lien against a landowner based on a quantum merit, and that was established by this court in Sorensen v. Dagger. Sorensen is very similar to this case, other than the arbitration issue. But the landowner argued the exact same thing, that subcontractor, you don't get to foreclose on a construction lien because you didn't substantially perform with the general contractor in that contract. Well, this court disagreed and said no. Regardless of whether the subcontractor performed or substantially performed under the general contract with the prime contract with the general contractor, the subcontractor is entitled to basically the reasonable value of its labor and the materials that it provided to the house. And that's what we're seeking to do here in this case. It doesn't require us to prove anything concerning the subcontracts, and I don't believe at this point that Nelson would even offer them as exhibits at the trial. I also want to address appellant's judicial comedy argument and the jurisdictional priority that they cite in that Charlene J case. They brought this, Austin brought this before the court on December 20th of 2021 when they filed their answer and affirmative defenses. They said that this was an arbitration, that this was subject to arbitration. So this was before the court, and it was argued to the court. They argued it. There's supplemental briefing where they argued it. They argued it in the reply brief. So this has been argued to the district court. The federal court hasn't even the federal court hasn't even ruled on this. The Charlene J case involved two child custody cases and the doctrine of the jurisdictional priority. Appellants and so for the jurisdictional priority doctrine to apply, there has to be, the two cases have to involve, I believe, the same whole issue. Well, we don't have that here. We have our case, foreclosure construction lien, quantum merit, and then we have the federal case, order arbitration between Nelson and Austin for all claims that they have against one another. Completely different. They also have to have the same parties. Here we have Ingredion in our case and Sioux City Foundry Company, federal court case. They're missing. There's no Ingredion. There's no Sioux City Foundry Company in that case. So judicial comedy and the doctrine of jurisdictional priority do not apply.
So, counsel, before you run out of time, I think I heard you say that you agree that perhaps the district court went too far here in deciding the arbitration issue.
If I said that, I didn't mean to say that.
Okay, then I'm glad I asked to clarify that. But let's assume we agree with your initial premise that we don't have a final appealable order. The case goes back to district court. Then what happens in your mind?
If the district court order is affirmed by this court, it goes back and we get a trial scheduling order and we go to court.
If we find we don't have jurisdiction, we don't affirm anything. We just dismiss the appeal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then, and you know, then it's back to square wherever you left off in the district court.
Correct. And that would be getting a trial scheduling order.
Okay.
And going from there.
But do you think the order that the district court entered precludes the issue of arbitration coming before the district court again?
No. I mean, the district court can consider or reconsider any order at any time that still has jurisdiction of the case, which it would at that time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
How much time did I take counsel over?
58 seconds.
Okay. We'll give you a minute and 10 seconds.
So why is this a special proceeding?
It is a special proceeding because of what the order says. The order ruled that the prime contract controls over. It made a substantive ruling on the merits and ruled that the prime contract controlled over the subcontract here. And that's the order we have. And I think we have to work from that order, the order itself. And I'd just like to address a couple other things about the stages of this. The federal case is on summary judgment right now. Austin has filed a summary judgment motion. There's been no progress in the state court case. Nelson's argument here to this court today essentially all related to whether the claims are arbitrable, not whether the arbitration clauses are enforceable. Those are two different questions. A motion to compel arbitration first asks whether the claims are the arbitration clauses are enforceable, and then whether the claims can be arbitrated. There's been no ruling about whether the claims are fall in with inside the arbitration clauses because the trial court ruled that the arbitration clause aren't enforceable. So this, the argument Nelson just made to this court, is not applicable to the issues here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both, counsel. We appreciate your arguments and your appearance here today. You are excused. Your case is submitted.